Welcome to the Comics Misremembered podcast with your hosts Jim and John, and here's the opening music.
Hey everybody! I hope you like that rocking intro.
Absolutely.
You're welcome to Comics Misremembered, as the voice said, as John's voice said at the beginning of the podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jim,
and I'm John,
and together we talk about comics and comic related items. And this is a special podcast because we're going to be talking about not only a comic, but also a comic related item in the same podcast.
That is true, and this is one of those red letter days.
Right.
Not to make fun of red letter media.
Right. And so we're going to be talking about a comic first, and then we'll explain what comes after that. Or I guess during the podcast we'll explain it. Now, I didn't post any kind of spoilers as to what we're talking about, but let me just say the title of the comic we're talking about, which is called The Last Days of American Crime.
Yes.
That's the name of the title. But before we get into talking about the comic, The Last Days of American Crime.
Yes, indeed.
We always play a game here at the beginning of the podcast, right?
That we do.
I pick a piece of music that's going to accompany the subject matter in a specific way. You can kind of figure it out. If you've read the comic, you can kind of figure it out. If not, we'll explain it to you. And John likes to guess the music because he hasn't heard what I've picked so far until right now.
Right.
But he does have a large inventory of music knowledge in his brain, and he likes to take a guess at what I pick. So, who's the artist? What's the name of the song?
So, that is from the great band from Seattle, Queensryche.
Yes.
And it is the title track from the magnum opus that is Operation Mindcrime.
Yes, exactly. Correct on both counts. And so, for those, you know, I think about Queensryche, and they were big, I'm going to say the biggest that they were late 80s, maybe?
Yeah, late 80s. Yeah, because that would be...
Silent Lucidity?
Yeah, that would be their pop hit, kind of crossover hit from Empire.
Yeah. So I think Empire was probably their big album that a lot of people got on because it had that Silent Lucidity, and it also had Jet City Woman.
Jet City Woman.
Was another a big song.
And also the self-titled Empire. Was a big hit too.
Yeah. No. That's what I'm saying. The song itself.
Yeah.
Empire. Correct. And I'm trying to think when I started. I think I actually started with Operation Mindcrime. I think that. So this is a couple of albums prior to Empire.
Absolutely. That I think that was the jumping on point because if you were kind of getting into the metal scene.
Yep.
That was sort of their breakout album for like all of us, you know, who were listening to like Metallica and, you know, some of the other people who had gotten in.
Well, and I think I was just looking for something new, and the cover caught me, and
yeah,
it looks kind of like newsprint, and it's very iconic. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna let me try this band out. I really liked it. And the thing about this album, especially if it's your first time getting into the band, is the album is a concept album.
Right.
And it's about near future. People are mind controlled. They become hitmen and the religion. It's got a whole bunch of other stuff going on there. It could be in its own comic.
Right. It should be its own comic, actually.
The way that it is. And Queensryche, when they were touring, they would sometimes just do this one album in its entirety and just like make it like an opera or something like that.
Yeah, it really was a rock opera. You know, I think that there are people like we have a friend who's particularly into Devin Townsend, you know, and that sort of like melodic sound wall of sound that, you know, that sort of that whole and then the idea behind the concepts that, you know, that you are explored over an entire album. So it's like this was one of those big moment records when it came out. I remember that my introduction to it was through what was the counterpoint to, there was Rolling Stone, and then there was the one that Bob Guccione's son did, the magazine.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Now I'm the same way.
This is why we call it Comics Misremembered, because
exactly.
Every once in a while we'll just have a blank.
Yeah.
But
I want to say it's like Curve or something like
that.
It's like a single title word.
Spin.
Spin. That's there you go. So I was getting there. Yeah, I was going to say it's like roll.
Yeah, it was, but you know, no, actually curve actually worked because yeah. I got it. But yes, so Spin Magazine was sort of like the upstart, and they were they had like the best new music reviews of any when it first came when Spin first came out.
Yeah.
Like they got me into Alice in Chains before all right, so just awesome stuff.
Okay, great. I'm trying to rush John because people who want to listen to talk, let's talk about comics.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily want to hear all of our story about how we got into music. But if you're interested in it, we highly recommend checking that out.
And it fits the subject of our of our podcast very well.
Exactly. So I'm moving on to now talk about the last days of American Crime.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about first before we describe the comic. I want to explain how we got into this comic. Now, this comic is written by Rick Remender. And we are both fans of Rick Remender. We've read a lot of his titles. And I've always been a person that when I see his name associated to a comic, I'm there. Like, yeah. I don't care what the subject matter is. I'm buying it. I'm going to get into it. I'm going to see if I like it or not. And usually I like it and I continue to read it. Rick Remender has written a lot of great comics. You know, I first discovered him... and it's not too distant future. It was maybe like 10 years ago when he was writing The Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
This is maybe like 15 years now. When he was writing The Punisher and he did the infamous Frankencastle storyline. And we are definitely going to be doing yes. a Comics Misremembered review of that. And I personally like that storyline. But anything he got on, I started reading. Now, this comic, unfortunately, I missed when it came out. It was a limited run, 3 issues.
Yeah.
And I don't remember seeing it on the news rack. It's one of those things. I probably just missed seeing his name there.
I think it wasn't even that. I think it was one of those things that was probably just sold out by the time we got there.
And it could have been because it could have been other people because limited that feel
edition,
the same way.
Limited edition name recognition for both the author and the artist.
Mm-hmm.
Would have probably been enough to sell that issue out before right. we even had a chance to even sniff it.
So I never saw it on there, so I didn't really kind of like search it up because I didn't know it existed, yeah. right? So about 3 weeks ago, I have a subscription to Netflix.
Yes.
And what Netflix loves to do is to recommend things to you that are similar to the things that you've been watching in the past, right? And they send not just one, two, but like a dozen things. So I'm going through it, and I see a title that says, Coming Soon, June 5th, The Last Days of American Crime, based on Rick Remender comp. And I'm like, wait, what? Wait,
how did I miss this?
Yeah, exactly. How did I miss this? So I went on the internet, found out it is collected in a trade, found out I could purchase it and get it delivered to me because, again, we're in... dystopian future where
dystopian COVID future
where you can't go anywhere and pick anything up anymore, so I have to get everything delivered to me.
Right.
So, but I did all this within like a couple of weeks, and I was able to get the book. And last week we're still doing dystopian futures. Like, luckily, it fits in that
absolutely.
This was genre.
This was like a home run with without even stepping out to bat.
Right. So I was like, oh, great. I was like, we can get it. We can read it because it's a short comic. As I mentioned, it's three issues. And John and I both can read it because I lent him the trade that I got.
Yep.
And we both, and the other great thing is we both got this, watch the movie because it just premiered yesterday. This is Saturday when we're recording it. So I'm like, this is great. We can do the podcast on both the comic and also the movie. Fantastic. This is It can't work out any better. So that's how we got here.
Absolutely.
Now, if you're just like us, where you maybe missed this when it was in the comic format, maybe you didn't see the trailer or you didn't know it was a Netflix movie, we'll clue
because
you
in. Because they did a pretty lousy job promoting it.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I knew it is because I actually read those things that they said. I don't read all of them, but I flipped through the first kind of five, and then I was like, wait, what? What's this? So John is going to do us to do us everybody a favor, he's going to give you a synopsis. Now, the comic is from Image, so I pulled the synopsis right off of Image's website, and John's going to give us a little description of what you can expect from this the comic version, probably the movie, too.
In the not-too-distant future, as a final response to terrorism and crime, the U.S. government plans in secret to broadcast a signal making it impossible for anyone knowingly to commit unlawful acts. But as the media has leaked the news of the anti-crime signal 1 week before it goes live, and now Graham Brick, who has been planning a huge heist, has just a few days to turn the crime of the century into the last crime in American history. So, pretty dramatic stuff.
Yes, exactly. And
it felt strangely appropriate, considering like some of the timing of the release on this was just like
it can feel like that on sometimes when you, depending on what social media feed you're reading, what news you're watching, it can feel like these are that American crime or this drama happening out in the streets, but that's not, you know, I just like the concept,
yes,
of this, that the government is going to institute this radio wave. And it's going to stop people from doing what's quote unquote wrong.
Right.
And that's how it's going to stop crime, is that because it does something to your brain. And if you try to, like, if I wanted to punch you in the face, I could do that right now. But if the brain thing was going, the radio it was going, I couldn't do it because that would be considered wrong.
So there's a little bit of like, there's a little bit of the idea behind like the operant conditioning as seen in like, A Clockwork Orange, you know, how like they deprogram.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, that was more individually, yes.
Right, yep. But the idea of being able to do this to the masses.
Right.
So that when your brain, when you start thinking a violent thought that you know is illegal,
yeah,
your brain will turn on your body and turn you into jelly.
Right.
You know, so that you can't commit the act, so you can't follow through.
Now, one thing, because we're going to talk about the comic first.
Yes.
And then we're going to talk about the movie. Now, the comic, the concept of this kind of like this anti-crime radio transmission, it barely gets touched on in the comic, and that's the way it should be.
Which is exactly, I was going to say, which is brilliant because this is a classic heist,
right?
Comic.
Because it's essentially the guy had it planned out, and it's going to take a month to put everything together. But as you mentioned in the synopsis, everybody finds out that in a week there's going to be this transmission that you can't commit crimes.
Right.
So he's like, oh, now instead of having a month, I have now 1 week to put it all together and get it to work.
Because Graham has spent a great deal of time to get into a position where, you know, through, you know, where he's in a position of power and trust, mm-hmm, and opportunity to commit this great crime.
Right.
And it's like, this is like his big score before he leaves.
Right.
And little did he know the exact scale of this.
Right. And so this reminds me of when we were talking about Sentient, the comic Sentient.
Yes.
I was talking about how it, the whole setup feels like a 1970s sci-fi movie or even like a 60s sci-fi novel, because it has these sci-fi elements to it, but it's a very human story at heart.
Right.
This is a very similar thing. It's the humans and the errors that we get into, trusting other people, with your life in some cases,
yeah.
It's got this sci-fi element to it, which is in the background. It's just another barrier that you have to get through in order to get to the goal, which is robbing a bank.
Much more David Mamet than say Neal Stephenson.
Right. Exactly. So, but that's what I like about it. It feels like, you know, we recently watched that movie, Zero Population Growth.
Oh, God, yeah.
A 60s movie. It felt like an art house movie.
Because the
background problem was you can't have children because the world is all overpopulated. And it focuses on a couple that wants to have a child. And how do you have a child in this system that if anybody spots you, they'll kill you and the baby.
Right.
Right? And that's the whole movie. Simple premise, right? This is the same thing.
Right.
I have to rob a bank, but I have to do it within a week or I'm not going to be able to do it at all. Let's see if we can pull it off. Like, you know, Ocean's 11, you know, it's whatever great. I'm not saying Ocean's 11 is a great movie, but
no, but whatever heist movie you
like Heist, the movie itself, James Caan, Heist. That was the name of the actor. I couldn't remember who was in Rollerball.
Okay.
James Caan. But yeah, whatever movie you want to remember.
Also,
oh no, that was Thief. That wasn't Heist. That was Thief.
I was thinking like there's a great Robert De Niro movie that's not necessarily hugely popular, you know, in terms of his like maybe not popular but not as well known, called Ronin.
Oh, Ronin. I thought you were going to say The Heist, which is a Mammoth movie, and both of those are Mammoth movies.
Right, but I was thinking it's very much
it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
He gets involved with a crew he doesn't necessarily trust.
Right.
And they don't trust him because they think that he may not be who he's portraying. Like they think he could be an infiltrator. Yeah, he could be an infiltrator, or he could be a thief. He could be the true guy. Great description analogy to what this movie is,
right?
Because so spoilers. All right,
we're going to do the complete spoiler alert for both the movie and the comic.
Right. So we're about like a quarter into talking about it here. So. The first, right off the bat, in the comic, you learn a couple of things. You learn that the guy who, the main character, his name is Graham Brick.
Yep.
But everybody calls him Rory, and we'll talk about why. And he is torturing a man named Enrique.
Yes.
Who is a safecracker for the job. Now, why is he torturing the guy who is supposed to be helping him in this job, John?
Because Enrique has done one of the cardinal sins. He dimed him out for a fix, because as people realize that they can no longer do crime, one of the things that you won't be able to do once this signal comes in are illegal drugs,
right?
Because you can't willingly commit a crime,
right?
With the signal on,
right?
So people are doing anything for their last fix,
right?
Including selling out their friends. So there's a great dissertation. Like one of those scenes that, you know, one of those classic scenes that I put up there with like the Michael Madsen scene in Reservoir Dogs.
Yep.
Where he's got the cop and he's explaining to, and in this case, Rory is explaining to Enrique why he spent all of this time going and getting not gasoline, but diesel.
Now, before you get into talking about that scene, I don't want to. Because I know we've talked about Rick Remender, but I've got to talk about who the artist is.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because
So Rick Remender is the writer of the comic, and the artist is Greg Tocchini. Greg Tocchini, you might remember, especially if you've read a lot of Rick Remender's other work.
If you're a fan of Low.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. These two got together, and they did a comic book called Low, which is like an underwater adventure. We did a recommendation for few years back.
I think it's like, what, about 20-something, 30
Yeah, it had its run. The run finished. And if you wanted to, you could collect it in trades.
It's excellent.
The other thing, too, is they worked together on Uncanny X-Force. They did... they didn't work together the entirety of that storyline, but it was a portion of that storyline. Yeah. Fantastic artwork there. Fantastic art from Greg Tocchini altogether. Like even in this comic too, he paints the pages.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make the assumption he's doing it digitally. It's not like not to discredit or anything, but I think you know that's how most people work nowadays. But to be able to see a blank screen, put some characters, you know, different dynamic angles, paint them in, especially to make it look realistic, because that's what this is. Yeah. It's a portrayal of a bank heist. So it's not going to be superhero capes, not going to be overly muscled or, you know, sexualized women in it. Just everybody's, it takes place in this dingy, distant future where everybody's screwing everybody over, and that's what it looks like.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're right. And he builds this world, this world building visually,
right.
Like you can see it. And as we go on to talk about it, I'm gonna like sprinkle little hints of like what I caught when I read this comic. But the artwork kind of draws you in. The words, the script are great. And this is where we're getting to the point, back to the point that you were just saying about the diesel.
Right.
So go ahead and make your point.
So Graham. And just as an apology, I'm going to call him Rory pretty much because everybody else calls him.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it seems like, and Graham doesn't seem like a Graham, but Rory is, he's an intelligence, like slightly sociopath, you know, but,
and he's an older gentleman. You would say like, he's probably in his mid-40s. Maybe close to 50.
Yeah. He's had a rough life. And he's trying, and this is his exit strategy, and he's just been betrayed. So he's going to, there's this great scene where he's got Enrique in the bathtub, he douses him, and then, you know, he's like, listen, dude, you're on this drug, and it's going to be hard for you to keep this straight. And he puts a cigar in his mouth, a lit cigar, and he's like, one touch to all the, you know, to the diesel is gonna light everything up.
Right. But the point he's doing this is so he finds out, like, you know, who did he time him out to? And it's the Spanish mafia. Right. And so he's like, I'm gonna give you a chance to survive, and he puts a cigarette in his mouth that's lit, and he's basically saying, if you can smoke this out to the filter, you're gonna survive. But he's bound in a bathtub full of diesel, and he's covered in diesel.
Yes.
All right.
So the thing is the reason why this is so important is that it establishes the existential threat beyond, like, just the surrounding of the world falling apart, you know, because of course people are rioting, you know, because there's a whole segment of the population is like, no, I want my free will. I don't want the government to be able to control what I think and feel.
Right. And so and also what this establishes is it's like that hard boiled dialogue too.
Yes.
So it's this hard boiled feel to it. There's a lot of inner monologuing, a lot of narration about, like, and it's mostly done through Rory Graham's point of view, which makes sense. I mean, it feels like it's like a 1940s Mickey Spillane kind of.
Right. I was going to say Dashiell Hammett. It's exactly. It's got, but the one good thing is that it maintains Rory as a reliable narrator through the process.
Right.
Which helps.
Yeah.
This is a big issue with me right now. I like my reliable narrations at this point.
So whatever he's saying is you're going to believe it because this is the only source of truth that you have throughout the comic, which is great. But so we know that Brick, I'm going to call him Brick.
Okay.
Because that's his name, Graham Brick.
Right.
Brick has a problem now. He just lost his safecracker, so he needs to get another safecracker. So he goes to his local bar. Now, this is, again, going back to, like, the little things that are sprinkled visually in there. So you're like, oh, why do they need this brainwave thing that controls crime? You can see how trashy the world, like, the world is a cesspool in this comic.
Right.
In this comic. And you know what it is? Because it feels like the Wild West when you read it. Reason I say this, when he goes to his local bar to talk to his favorite bartender, he goes up to the door. There's two giant thugs, armed.
Yep.
Guns, and they say to him, "Hey, you know the rules. Got to give up your piece in order to get inside."
Yep.
What? Wait, who has to go into a bar with a gun? Again, it's exactly. Just showing you how
never bring
how,
your gun to town.
Exactly, exactly. It feels like that. It feels like the Wild West where you have to walk around with a gun because you don't know who's going to come at you, and then you see these bodies in the street. You don't know if the bodies are alive or dead. They're just random bodies lying in the street. There's people fornicating in the corner. There's people doing drugs on the street. Like, everything's visually there. And in the background, you get, like, these nude?
Yes, news broadcasts.
You get these news broadcasts, and they kind of, like, tell you the story about, like, the anti-crime thing. It's called the American Peace Initiative, API. That's the official name for it. But you get a little bit about it's coming up, it's being planned, expect it to happen. And this protest, people protesting against it because, you know, wow, we're losing free will because we're going to be mind controlled.
One of the great little throwaway lines is that they were like, 2,000 people died in riots in Chicago protesting, you know, it's like,
yeah.
And you're like, and it just seems like it has an element of timeliness.
Right. Well, yes. Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of things going on, but this world is in a much worse place than where we're living today. Okay, so he has to place an ad to get, like, a safecracker because he only has a week.
Right. He talks to his bartender. Fixer.
Yeah, he talks to his bartender, Colin, whose name's Colin, and he says, "Do you know anybody?" He's like, "I can't get anybody on that short of a notice." And he's like, "Okay." So he reaches out through some other option, and he meets who's going to be his future safecracker. His name is
Kevin Cash.
Kevin Cash. Was it Kevin Cash? Yeah, you're right, Kevin Cash. Yeah. I wrote the names now because I'm, you know, how great we are with remembering names.
Yes,
Kevin Cash, and he brings his wife. I believe it's his wife in the comic.
Well, the thing is that you don't.
No. I'm gonna get to that.
Okay.
And her name is Shelby Dupree. Now, they don't meet like this.
No,
they meet much differently. And again, spoilers again.
Yes.
So as Brick is waiting at the bar, enjoying his drink, waiting to meet his contact for his safe cracker, Kevin Cash, a lovely young woman, short black hair, has star tattoos on her shoulder, comes in and starts hitting on him. And he's like, okay, where's this going? And then she's like, I have, and they flirt with each other a little bit. And then and she says to him, I have a bucket list. Oh, yeah, she also has a black eye. And he's like, you know, oh, how'd you get that black eye? And she makes up a story about how it's got attacked on the street because it's crime, you know, it's crime going on out there. Okay, yeah. And she says, I have a bucket list. And on my bucket list is to do it in the bathroom. Do it. Have the sexy time in the bathroom. So he's like, oh, well, I'm going to oblige you and do them. So they go into the, she's like, come with me in the bathroom. And help me check off this thing on the bucket list. Yeah, sure. Go
in.
I'm going to explain it.
Yeah, okay.
So they have sex, of course. And at the end, Brick says to her, what exactly was it that you had on to check off on your bucket list? And she says, it was to fuck a loser.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's cold-blooded.
Because
Wait. She said it was to fuck a loser. I was going to call him Cole. That's how Brick felt.
And the thing is that the inner monologue while he's talking about it, he's talking about like the passion, you know, like this, the, you know, this connection that he feels. And then all of a sudden he's like, the moment changed. And then he goes back out, you know, after this is all done. And, of course, the bartender's making fun of him because everybody in the bar heard him, you know, heard them going at it.
Exactly.
And, you know, so he sits down and all of a sudden the Kevin Cash shows up.
And he's hey, I'm your safecracker.
And he's like, oh, by the way, let me introduce you to my fiance.
Yeah. And it's, oh, it's that girl you just had sex with in the bathroom. And so this is the turbulent dynamic between the love triangle.
So at this moment, I'm also going to do another movie shout out to The Grifters, because it's establishing that sort of dynamic.
Yeah, The Grifters is much different.
The thing about the Grifters is that
everybody was out for themselves, and you figure that out by the end of the movie. The spoilers for The Grifters. I love The Grifters. That's a great movie, with heists and people tricking each other, and this book is kind of like that.
Well, the reason why I'm doing the shout out is because at this point you realize, at this point you're beginning to realize that different people, these people have very different agendas,
mm-hmm.
and that even though they're all on the, they're sort of united, and they, you know, that this is going to be something that they're going to do together. There's obviously very different motives for who's doing what to whom.
Right. And the other thing to point out too is that when Kevin introduces her and says she's going to be partnering with me to do the job, and he's like, I only need one person to safecrack. He's like, she is a hacker.
Right.
And she can help us hack. The thing is, they're going to go into a bank, but they're not going for money.
Right.
Basically says, When the anti-crime thing goes off, we're even going to change over from physical money to
digital currency.
Digital currency.
So there's a historical precedence that just happened in the last couple of years. India decided that they wanted to get rid of like all of its illegal money,
mm-hmm.
so they reissued their entire currency,
mm-hmm.
and there was a moment of India just sort of exploding like this, right. where people were trying to figure out how to get the thing. And of course, Brick is in the middle of this because he's got himself into a situation where he's working security. He has access to this facility and where they're bringing in the old money to be destroyed and in return to get this new clean currency.
Right. Now, just to kind of speed the plot along a little bit. I'll be jumping around at this point because we do want to talk about the movie, so we don't want to spoil 100% of what the comic book's going to get you. But as you can see, it's a well-paced crime heist drama that has a few twists and turns at the end of the comic, which I liked.
Right.
And how it works out is the Enrique had snitched about Brick to this Spanish mafia.
The La Familia.
Yeah, I don't know the official name. I didn't write it down. I should have done that. But these people are constantly hounding Brick, Rory, to find out where is this machine that can still print money. That's what they're getting. That's right. The golden goose is that they're going to get a machine. It can still print physical money, and they can still use it. And the plan is to get this, and then they're going to get out of America. He says we're going to go to Canada. So once we get the machine, we're going to get out of America and go to Canada, and we're going to spend all that money, and we're going to have all this great thing stuff to do. And they're in it. So it's just like those three, the characters that we just talked about, and then it turns out Colin, the bartender, is the fourth, right, who's going to play a part. Okay. The rest of the comic is setting up the plot about how they pull the job. The other parts of the comic is about how the La Familia gets involved and finds out. There was a twist in the middle there about how Graham almost, you know, Brick, this is Graham Brick again, how Graham Brick is almost killed,
right,
because of a dangling plot thread, which we won't talk about. And and also that how Shelby, who was trying to help him at that point, almost gets killed too.
Yeah.
That all gets resolved. We don't want to spoil too much, but it's great, and it makes sense. The plot's not like, you know, it doesn't tell you these stories and go off in tangents, and then you're like, where the hell is this going? Everything makes sense.
Okay. You get the backstory of Kevin Cash and how he's, you know, how he is actually the reason why this is so important for him is that he comes from he's doing this for legacy.
Yeah.
Because his father used to be a crime boss.
Well, I don't want to give too much. Oh, I was going to kind of.
Okay, so let me pull. I can't pull that back.
You can say the crime boss, but there's a reason he doesn't have. He's not on good terms with his father.
He has had he has definite daddy issues. Mm-hmm. So but unfortunately, his father is one of the only source of something essential to the heist itself.
Right.
So in order for all of this to get resolved and the heist to go forward, there is a confrontation between father and son.
Right.
And fireworks ensued.
Exactly.
But the one thing that's the one thing that's done so well is both in the comic and the movie is the way that it gets played out.
Yeah.
And it's stellar.
Right. And the other thing too about that, before he goes to see his father and how that all plays out, is that he likes to do drugs. Kevin Cash is a drug user. And his drug of choice, I think, was meth. And there's a scene in the comic where he gets into these three meth heads and they sell him crack and he's or meth, and they tell him, oh, it's yellow, so that means it's the best. And he's like, no, yellow meth is the worst. You guys are terrible. Give me it, you crackheads, and let me get out of here.
Yeah.
So he buys it, and they follow him back to his room. Now, the reason I bring this up is because as Kevin's kind of like using the drugs because he's alone, he's making an explosive device. I guess this is like another one of his things.
Yes.
He has a little eight ball that you can see he's packing.
It's a physical. It's a physical eight ball.
Yeah, it's a keychain. It's a keychain. And he's watching TV as he does this. And on the TV, it says, it's talking about a documentary about what led up to the API. And it says, after the loss of tens of millions of people to dirty bombs across six major cities, caused the government to seek alternate means of control. In this case, a neuroinhibitor that makes it impossible for anyone knowingly to break the law in any way, form, or fashion. This move, entitled the American Peace Initiative, is nothing less than mind control. So it's like this liberal-leaning person is saying their piece, and then the conservative person has the counterpoint. But it gives more of a background of like why. So not only do you see all this crime that's portrayed in every panel of the comic, but you get this exposition in the background that says, like, okay, there's a lot more that led up to this. It wasn't that.
This wasn't a cascading just level of ramming up the already existent repression in society.
Right. It's almost like, let's say 9/11 happened and like Timothy McVeigh happened. And so the government's kind of like, oh my God, okay, we have to do something about this. We have to kind of like be the pre-crime. You know, we have to stop the crime before it happens. And then this is
we're
going to
get Minority Report on your ass.
Right, exactly. So this, it's again, they don't, this is the most that they explain about the whole, you know, anti-crime thing. And that's perfect for me because it's just like it kind of sets the mood about how they've been testing it. And so they're worried when they actually do the crime because they're going to commit the crime the day it starts firing, that right. the wave starts going out. And they don't know how it's going to work, but they're trying to time it so that because they think there's going to be kind of, they're talking about it, and they're thinking there's going to be like a testing period. So even if it goes off, you're not going to really be inhibited too much because they're still testing it and fine tuning it until it can go right like that, where I can't do anything.
Right.
And that's the other thing. So as they're pulling off the job, you can see that it's starting to happen. The other, and I just love the way, it's so simple that, The final job, like the right. third issue is the final act, the third act. And it explains, we can spoil this part.
Right.
Brick is a security officer at a bank. And all banks have like, they're heavily armored. They have tanks on the front steps. Everybody, all the security officers walk around with guns, of course. Right. And they have a bulletproof shield. So they're like, they explain how we're going to get through that. And Brick has a plan of getting through that. There's another great element to this is people being blackmailed.
Yes.
And that the way that they get blackmailed prior to yes. the crime itself. Like two people get screwed over. Shelby, I think, is involved in...
Shelby's involved
one
in both,
directly.
Is in both in the in, involved in both the comic and in the movie.
No. There's two blackmail... Because yeah. there's two black,
oh, that's right.
blackmail things. So Shelby is part of the distraction at the beginning of the heist. And she gets like the main boss out right. of the building. I like how that all... But there's another one in order to get the codes to access thing. Brick and Shelby work together right. on getting a blackmail in order to get the codes. I don't want to spoil yeah. anything. I love it. It's funny. It's sick. It's funny.
Yeah. And it's the thing about this comic is that when I read the comic, you know, and I finished it up that on Thursday, and I was like, I'm like, there's no way that this is going to be...
They could definitely do everything that was in the comic they could have put into a movie.
Right.
In fact, it's almost like a storyboard for a movie. If they took yeah. every idea, the way it plays out, I thought...
I was trying to figure out how they were what they were going to do to make it different, and
right.
and when this is where we get this is where the fun begins.
Well, and then the final thing, without spoiling too much, too, is Kevin Cash reveals his kind of secret plan about how he's going to avoid the anti-crime wave detector, and he explains it. And he's going to try to pull a double cross because you get that because,
right.
again, we've introduced that he's been having sex and he's figured it out that, you know, this is the love triangle and he's figured out that I'm out in the cold in this love triangle.
Right.
Or is he? Or is Shelby, like you said, like the grifters, is Shelby playing Graham and that they're both coming at him at two different angles?
Right.
That can't, you know. So we're not spoiling that point. You're going to figure that out by the end of the movie, or the end of the comic, right? But... it all plays out. It all makes sense. Now, here's a couple of things that I wish were explained more or didn't get explained sure. through the comic. So, John, you mentioned I'm going to call him Rory.
Right.
Why do you want to call him Rory?
Rory is one of the he's the absent character who's always being referred to.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the movie did a better job explaining who Rory was than the comic. Right. Because Rory is actually Brick's younger brother.
Right.
And we just know that he's passed on, that he had been involved in something and gotten pinched by the police and bad things happened to him.
And he's also using that name when he is the security guard, because maybe Rory had a cleaner
record.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my guess. We also know that Brick is struggling with drug addiction and, you know, coming down off drugs.
Yes.
And he talks to Colin about this. Colin is a longtime friend, so he knows about the struggle that he goes through. And he struggles through... all the issues about wanting to use drugs but not right. running to them because I want to be clean when I get into the heist itself. So that's another thing. But I think I wanted to know more about like what happened to Rory. There's this other angle where it has Rory or Brick lives with his mother. His mother has Alzheimer's.
Yes.
She thinks he's Rory. And there's not like a big explanation. So that was my only issue with the comic. That we don't know what happened to Rory, but we put this together. Like you can assume he was maybe the better brother.
Right.
He was the good son, and you know, Brick is the prodigal son.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. So, but that was, I think, the only issue that I had with the comic.
The comic was yes, I agree with that, because there were a couple of things plot wise which, you know, just didn't necessarily get 100% of the attention that I would have liked to have seen, but in the long run, because it involves spoilers, I thought that they were, maybe they needed a little bit more emphasis, because they got emphasis in the show and it worked, and in that case I liked that part of the story better.
Yeah.
But let's transition on to the movie.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna transition. So the movie premiered on Friday night on Netflix. John and I both watched it.
Yes.
It's a movie.
Well, okay.
Okay. So the reason why I'm a little disappointed with the movie is it strays two major. So these are my two major things. You can have different idea.
Sure.
Actually, before we get into it, the main character, Edgar, the who plays Brick,
yes.
The guy who plays Brick. I'm looking at my phone now so I can see what his name is. And his name is Edgar Ramirez. No problem with Edgar Ramirez.
Right.
You know, he fits the bill. He's an older gentleman. He looks different than Brick. Because when you see Brick in the comic, you can tell he's an older man. Because he's got like the Clint Eastwood short gray hair. In his face, he looks wrinkled. Edgar Ramirez is in his 40s in real life. Not in, you know, in comic, right. Not in movie thing. But he's got thick black hair. And he's got a thick beard. So he doesn't. You know, if you look at him, he doesn't look like he's that much older. But the other thing, too, is so he is a Brazilian actor, I believe. And when I read a little bit of his bio, he knows Portuguese, of course. And he knows English. He knows German. He knows a whole bunch of languages. And because of that, he has this kind of weird accent. It doesn't sound like anything I ever heard. So when he was... He doesn't have like a lot of speaking roles. There's some narration at the beginning.
But was it my imagination, or was he sometimes a little hard to understand?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Because his accent's so off. Yeah, it's weird. It's I can't place it. It's one of those things when you hear somebody talk and you're trying to figure out where are you from originally, and it's muddled because maybe you learn so many different languages. You don't necessarily have the cadence to speak.
I was going to say it's there being a polyglot like that where you have multiple different native languages.
Yeah.
Usually there seems to be a dominant one.
Yeah.
His seems to be a blend of all of them. And exactly. That's the thing that gets me. That's the thing that kind of gets me. So like, for example, nobody, unless we really go off, very few people would automatically peg us for Bostonians.
Right. Well, exactly. Well, I'm, you know, we say that, but people listen to the us talk and they.
Well, I'm just talking about the people who work in different parts of the country who talk with me.
Right.
None of them will assume that I'm from Boston.
Right.
But the thing, and because they have views on how Bostonian should sound, but it's
where your friends from Boston.
Anyway, but I don't park my car. I don't.
There's a Sam Adams commercial going around, and it's just like, it's your cousin from Boston, and he says, "I'm your cousin from Boston," and I'm like, "Okay, we don't talk.
We're
like
all
that.
Set by that." Okay. But the point is that, and I know several people who are like multilingual who have who literally live in multiple countries during the course of a year, and they don't sound like that,
right?
So it's an odd cadence. It's definitely not. And it doesn't match the character. That's the only sort of criticism I have for it.
So it's distracting. And that's not an issue. That's like not one of the two issues I had. I just wanted to bring that up.
No, I know.
It's just like, that was the first thing that caught my ear. You know?
It does kind of take me out of it though a little bit. That was, right. I think that was a part of it.
Now the funny thing is the other two actors that are in there. So we mentioned Kevin Cash and we mentioned Shelby.
Yep.
And so Kevin Cash is played by Michael Pitt, and I always liked Michael Pitt as an actor. We were talking about him. He was in, I remember him from Boardwalk Empire,
yes.
the final couple of seasons, and he played this great foil to Nicky Thompson and Steve Buscemi's character, and I thought he was great in that. Yeah. I thought he was great in this movie. I thought he did a...
Yeah, he did a bang-up job.
Yeah, he did a great job in it. There's also Anna Brewster. She plays the Shelby Dupree character.
Yep.
And she's English. And you wouldn't get that.
Right.
Because the way she has kind of
she
like
has a consistent accent.
Yeah, she has a consistent accent. But she's an English actress. And I was looking at her face and I'm like, I recognize that face. Now, she was in, I was looking at her credits, and she was in The Tudors on Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where she's probably most known. But she had a bit part in The Force Awakens. You know when they go to the bar in the middle of the movie?
Yeah.
And there's a person that reports, there's like, oh, the droid is, one person reports to the rebels, they found the droid. Yeah. The other person reports to the Empire.
Yes. On the droid. Okay, so she's
the woman.
Yeah,
that reports. I found the droid, and I'm like, she's because she has a pretty face, mm-hmm. but it's a very identical. Like you can identify.
Identifiable.
Yeah. So that's what I remember from. So I was like, wow, it's weird how brains work, especially my brain. So we wanted to kind of talk about the actors. I think everybody did a great job in the movie, but the 2 points.
Yes.
Point number one. They spend way too much time explaining API.
Yes.
Actually, I have 3 points now that I talk about it. They have way too much time explaining API, what it is, how it works. They talk about how it gets fine-tuned. In fact, they changed the story around so much about how Kevin Cash has a relationship with Rory that gets back to Brick.
Right.
Okay? And it works, I guess. It, you know, I have issues with that. So that's the first issue. You didn't need to do that. It doesn't need to be like that. It starts off, they explain, like, in fact, let me set up. So sure. Just as we explain the first scene in the comic where he's drenching the guy in diesel fuel and he gives him a cigar instead of a cigarette.
Yes.
And he says, you can, and you see an explosion, so you assume he's dead in the movie. There's no way he's getting out of that. Or is there? And it talks about after that, he has a flashback about how he did a job and they were testing the signal.
Right.
And it stopped them from doing the rest of the bank job because their brains got mushed. And they took the money. And then you find out there's this guy who's like runs the town and you have to pay a percentage of the bank. So they introduce this other guy who plays kind of like the Spanish mafia.
Right, so it's their version of La Familia.
Yeah, and so that it works, but then that's it. It gets away from the bank job, and they're going to do another job that's not a bank job.
Right,
but it's similar to the heist itself. So they make a totally different heist job.
Right,
this is another problem that I have with the movie. Why do that when you had a perfectly good heist job? I'm like, okay, maybe it doesn't work visually, but I'm like, no, the comic was pretty visual, and it's, and in fact, it's simpler to explain it in the as the comics heist rather than this super complex. I have to drive a car into a building and all this other crap.
I didn't have a problem with the whole explanation of Rory and Kevin's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a problem with how much API had taken over so much of the story.
Yeah,
I'm exactly there with you.
The plan is to not get a machine that can make money, but get all this excess money that they're going to burn anyway.
Well, they were getting clean money because what they're doing is that's why I referenced the whole thing in India because yeah. It was obvious that they were using that as the model.
This is something that exists in the real world where they burn money that right. that's considered like no longer in print. So they burn the money right. And then they just print new money. Okay, so that's part of this whole new complex heist.
Right, it's too complicated.
Right. I think those are pretty much my two big issues because they changed the story so much from what the original comic had, and they didn't need to do that.
Right.
It kind of made it less anti. Like, there's so many plot holes that I had with them doing the heist itself.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, it's not, okay. The cops know you're pulling the heist. They're right. Like, oh, we shot the cameras out so you can't see us. But they saw you before you got in there. They know what you. They know you're doing the heist right now.
Right, and
they could have fortified the whole building where they're doing the heist in.
Right,
and they drive a garbage truck to get out of there. Okay, how fast can a garbage truck go?
Yeah, not fast.
Not fast. and you can deploy. It's a, all right. So now I know you're going to mention something. You had another issue with it that we were talking about prior to the podcast. Right. Go ahead and talk about your issue, and I'll kind of pile on that after you
so,
talk about it.
One of the things that works is that the everybody's motivation is pretty tight.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's motivation is
a reason for being there is
personal,
it, yeah,
very personal. And what they did was they added a character that didn't need to exist, and a relationship with Shelby Dupree, her sister.
Oh, I thought you were, okay. That wasn't the thing I wanted you to talk about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The one thing is they had this whole side story about a police officer.
Oh. Okay, so I'll put a bookmark in that just, and I want to just go back and
okay.
one of the best parts of the comic is how Rory is aware of, because he's in a position of power, he ends up blackmailing one of these other cops, and you know
in the comic yeah,
and so in the movie they have this random hardo cop. Who's like, you don't know who he is. He's sort of like the hero cop.
Well, let me just explain a little bit first. So because of this anti-crime wave thing that's going to come off, they're disbanding the cops.
Right.
But they're going to keep them as an auxiliary maybe. So they give this inhibitor they put into their necks so they don't get affected by the crime. Because you got to shoot somebody, right? So they show that the cops are...
Once again, above the law.
No. They explain that they're disbanding. They don't exist anymore. That it's all going to go over to this one guy who controls the signal for all of America. Part of this is there's this one guy who's like, even though these are the last days of American police officer work, I'm going to be super cop and go out there and I'm going to patrol the streets, even though I don't have to. And I'm going to show you that I'm the best cop that there still exists, even before you disband us.
That's what I'm saying. He's just the hardo cop.
But I had to explain.
Sorry.
Right. But the thing is he has a plot in the end of the movie, but you didn't need to give this backstory. There's absolutely no reason. Cause it could be any cop that just comes in and says, "Hey, what are you doing here trying to interrupt the crime anti-crime wave thing?"
I'm trying to figure out if he's like symbolic or something.
It was just this arbitrary police officer side story that has absolutely, they're like padding the movie. There's no reason why this cop had to exist.
And if you had just stuck to the original plot, you didn't need to pad it. It was fine the way that it was.
So I think I'm sitting there waiting. I'm waiting. I'm like, why did you have this? There's a reveal that the reason why he's like a super cop is because he maybe killed somebody by accident in the past.
And he was acquitted and he's trying to restore his name.
There's like these news articles that you can see on the wall. Okay, but again, you don't need all that.
Right.
Because if somebody found out that somebody broke into where the anti-crime wave is supposed to be, an alarm goes off and there's a police officer nearby, it doesn't matter who it is. They're going to do the job. The only thing I thought they were going to, because they don't, what you didn't know was did he get it or didn't he get the shot in the neck that is the inhibitor? And I thought he didn't get it because he didn't want it.
Right.
But he got it. So it kind of spoiled the whole thing.
Right.
Because it's like the wave goes off and because they're fighting, Shelby and the cop are fighting because she's the one that has to disable the crime wave for a few minutes so that they can escape. And they're fighting and then they can't fight because the thing goes on and off.
Yeah.
And you would think the officer is going to have the same effect she has, so they can't fight each other. So maybe they have to think of a way to get around each other so they can stop each other, or she can flee and he can try to stop her, which would have been better.
Right.
But no, they didn't do that.
Right.
Why didn't you do that? It's so stupid. Okay, I'm sorry. Talk about the sister. That was the other thing.
And the other thing was they included, there's a relationship that Shelby has. There's another angle that Shelby is playing throughout the whole comic and in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that the comic, keep going, don't mind me. The comic does such a better job of what her angle is with this.
Yes,
because the movie has it involving a sister and this, you know, that's that because you know they now she's a compromised person. It takes away her agency.
Right.
And this is a big issue with me.
Now, the thing is that there is this police angle in the comic.
Right.
With Shelby.
Right.
There's this police angle, but has the sister.
Right.
And as you mentioned, it takes away her agency because you don't need the sister.
Right.
You could just have this police. Is she gaming the cops?
Right.
Or isn't she? And that you won't know that until the end of the movie and the end of the comic.
Which is part of the reason why I brought in the grifters, because yeah. you're never quite sure of what people's motivations are.
Right.
And the question is, how much can any of these characters trust each other? The unspeakable crime that the movie did for me was destroy that.
Right.
Because the whole idea is that you're never sure, even at these times where it looks like Rory has something for Shelby.
Yeah.
There's always, you're never sure that it's not an angle from her or an angle from him.
Right.
That he's just not having insurance.
Right. So, and then the last thing that we'll talk about that I kind of had an issue with
sure.
with the movie is the ending. Now, I'm not going to spoil the comic book ending,
yeah.
but it's kind of a happy ending.
Yes.
It's kind of a happy ending. The movie ending is stupid, to put it bluntly.
Yeah.
The movie ending, Graham gets killed.
Yep.
Major spoiler, right? If you didn't see the movie, you're probably not going to see the movie after we talk about it so much. But Graham gets murdered.
Yeah.
And he escapes with Shelby to Canada, but he got shot in the stomach, so eventually he dies.
Right, he bleeds out.
Which
is stupid, because they could have stopped at any point.
They had a truck full of $1 billion.
Right.
And the Canadian police people try to arrest him, but of course he's dead and she fled the truck.
Right.
So she took a bag of like $1 million. Maybe because you can't fit $1 billion into a bowling
bag. A little bag.
Yeah. So she maybe has not even $1 million, probably like $200,000. That's all you can fit in like this little bag that she did. She doesn't take a duffel bag. She takes like a bowling ball bag. And she walks off. And the last scene you see is Shelby with her little sister, because they're in Canada and they're living in Canada and they seem to be okay. And she's driving a nice car. And I'm like,
and she's driving for some reason, she's driving the Trans-Canadian Highway. And what's even worse, she's got fucking Rory's ashes, not bricks.
No. Well, the reason why she has Rory's ashes is because they don't explain why he has his ashes.
Right.
They don't explain how he got them.
Right.
They don't explain why he has to bring them to Canada.
Right. None of this. No. We've got 30 minutes of plot exposition about API.
Right.
Where we needed about 10 minutes of that and about another 10 minutes of exposition on who the leap Rory was.
Yeah.
In a way that wasn't connected to Kevin Cash.
Right. So that's what I'm saying is Michael Pitt, who plays Kevin Cash, he plays a great Kevin Cash because, again, he plays like a junkie, kind of crazy guy. Which he is kind of in the comic. I think he plays a little bit more gusto. And
he was what what's his face was trying to do with Joker.
With Jared Leto.
Jared Leto was trying to do with the Joker, where he has this moment where he's like,
you know, he would make a great Joker.
He would.
Yeah.
Where he does the whole, and this is the thing that gets me, because I'm not going to not recommend the movie
I'm not recommending the movie.
Okay, no, but I'm just simply saying I will recommend it for just the whole thing where he does the whole Nietzsche, I have transcended good and evil.
No, but here's the thing. So you watch the movie, right? And you're like, okay, that was okay. I'm going to read the comic. Let me get this comic. And then you start flipping through the comic and you're like, whoa, that movie was shit. That movie took a big dump on this comic. This comic is fantastic. What the hell happened to the movie?
Yeah.
Maybe don't read the comic and watch the movie and then go read the comic so you can have that same moment.
Yeah.
Rick Remender's probably like, you know, I don't care.
Please go watch the movie.
I still get a paycheck. He's like, I'm looking at all those zeros on this paycheck and I don't care what they did with that movie.
I think a lot of
people that make a product. So the other thing that got translated for Rick Remender was Deadly Class.
Yeah.
And that was a great TV show.
And by the way, if you were going to do Rick Remender a solid, you should have just given them Deadly Class Year 2.
Yeah, but the sci-fi. I knew the show was dead on arrival when it was on sci-fi, because they only if you don't have like so, if you don't get super mega ratings, you're canceled.
Yeah, which
it's,
is
it's canceled network.
Totally fucking stupid because it was successful and it was a great it was great. Sorry. Don't
worry. Maybe it got picked up by somebody else. But that's what I'm saying. It's like Rick Remender probably loved what they were doing with the sci-fi show
because
it was very true to the source material. This movie, what the flip happened?
So, and the thing that gets me is that there were certain scenes that were almost literal shot for shots from the comic.
It started great because it had the scene at the beginning of the movie, and I'm like, this is a really great start. And then it farted. And
there's another scene where certain things are happening, and you know where we're talking about it obliquely, where Rory almost dies with Shelby.
Yeah.
And they're walking out, and there's certain things are happening.
We'll call him Graham.
Graham, sorry. Where, you know, where Brick is coming out with Shelby, and that there's certain story beats that were literally shot for shot, which I loved.
Oh yeah, there were lines from the comic in the movie, but it's not enough to save it.
Yeah,
they went too far from the source material for me to be happy with it. Like even if I watch it as a movie, I'm kind of like, again, because of the plot holes, the whole heist part of it is terrible. The way that they did it, I'm just like, this guy hiding underneath the car, and they used a mirror under the car. How did you not see the guy hiding under? How do you explain that? There's a guy under the car. And how does he hold on? There's nothing under the car. This car wasn't redesigned in two days. I could analyze
we don't want
100 different things that's wrong with the whole, just the heist portion of the movie. Okay, forget about it. All right, so... Yes, The Last Days of American Crime, fantastic comic book.
Right.
Highly recommend buying it, reading it, checking it out.
Double thumbs up.
If you have Netflix, you can watch it. Like, we complain about it. You know something? Watch it. Go watch The Last Days of American Crime. The Michael Pitt role is great.
Right, and also Shelby does a great job.
Yeah, I think all the actors do a great job. Right. It's just that they have terrible material to work with, unfortunately.
And the parts that are and the thing is that if you go ahead and read the comic first, when you see the parts that are actually the comic coming on screen, you really enjoy it. You're like, oh wow.
Then you're disappointed with the rest of it. All right, so that's the end of where we've hit the hour mark. Thanks for listening to us, and hopefully you enjoy this podcast and were informed and want to go out and read all this stuff.
Jim puts a lot of time and energy into this and in maintaining our social media presence. And once again, you can get the podcasts at
Anchor FM. So if you go to comicsmisremembered.com, which is our website, there's a link there to Anchor FM. Through Anchor FM, you can listen to this podcast through Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, five other things. They redistribute the podcast through all these other medias that myself couldn't do, and so that's why we switched hosting the podcast to them, because they're the ones that get that
huge shout out to Anchor.
Yeah, so the if you go to Comics Misremembered, the link is there. You can click on the link, you'll get it, and all the other podcasts that we ever did. They're at comicsmisremembered.com. I also put a little, if you go to the website itself, Comics Misremembered, I put a little search bar in there. So if you wanted to search for a title that we reviewed in the past, like Sentient, maybe you want to listen to our podcast, just type in Sentient. Pops it right up there. If you want to see the low review that John did for Comics Misremembered New Comic Day, type in low. Pops right up. And so if there's any title that you like, you know, because we've done 263 of these podcasts, maybe there's a title that we covered and you would want to hear about it. Type in a title of a comic book story, a comic book character that you're interested in. You'll probably find something that we covered on this podcast. We do a lot of obscure stuff. We do a lot of popular stuff.
Right.
We go with the highs and the lows.
There's something there for everybody.
Exactly. So thank you very much for listening to us this week. And we will see you next week with, who knows, maybe we'll do another Dystopian Futures comic like we did this week.
So that's a nice way of describing my 50th birthday.
That dystopian future for John, because it's his birthday next Saturday. Maybe we'll do something different. Who knows? But we will see you, no matter what, in 7.